This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on August 21st, 2008. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Meeting will come to order. We're back in session. Next item on the agenda. Is John McCain 2008. Explains the cameras.
Good morning. Danita Lee.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a motion.
All right, hang on.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move for the suspension of the rules for the timely submission of documents to consider agenda document 0817B and 0817C.
Without objection, so ordered. Take it away.
Thank you. Good morning. Danita Lee on behalf of the Office of General Counsel. Pending before the Commission is Senator John McCain's request of February 8, 2008 to withdraw from the Presidential Primary Matching Payment Program. The Commission was previously unable to act on this request because it lacked a quorum. Also before the Commission is the Office of General Counsel's memorandum analyzing various issues arising from the request to withdraw and recommending that the Commission release Senator McCain from his obligations under the matching payment program. As background, last August, Senator McCain applied to participate in the matching payment program, and on August 28, 2007, the Commission certified that Senator McCain was entitled to $100,000 in matching payment program funds. On December 19, 2007, the Commission certified that Senator McCain was entitled to an additional amount in excess of $5.9 million. We understand that the U.S. Department of Treasury has not paid matching payment program funds to Senator McCain pursuant to notice it received from Senator McCain regarding withdrawal. We also understand that the Treasury has delayed making payments because it is awaiting action from the Commission as to whether it will withdraw its certifications entitling Senator McCain to matching funds. The Office of General Counsel recommends that Senator McCain be released from the matching payment program because, as discussed in our memo, the public financing program involves providing money as a public benefit to a candidate in exchange for his agreement to be voluntarily bound by the expenditure limits. We conclude, therefore, that there necessarily exists a point of no return after which a candidate has received or is at least assured of receiving the public benefit such that he is bound by the spending limits. We further conclude that the point of no return is either the actual receipt of public funds or pledging public funds as security for private financing, and that the pledge of public funds as security for financing constitutes receipt or the benefit of the bargain. In our memo, we offer three different approaches for considering the request to withdraw. In support of our recommendation, we look to the Commission's bridge and bank loan regulations, which deal with the use of entitlement to public funds as security for private loans, for guidance on the Commission's intended meaning of the pledged standard as put forth in the Dean withdrawal matter and the Gephardt advisory opinion. We also examine the alternative approaches which would either prohibit withdrawal or permit withdrawal under a different standard. Regarding our recommended approach, under the bridge and bank loan regulatory standards as applied here, we believe that no unambiguous pledge of public funds occurred and that no public funds were made available to the bank to retire the loan. Therefore, Senator McCain did not receive the benefit of the bargain. Also, in support of our recommendation, we indicated that we had not identified any persuasive policy reasons to prohibit withdrawal. We balanced the consideration of money as the public benefit against taking an inflexible approach that would bind candidates who do not want the money, and note that unwanted funds could then be dispersed among other publicly financed candidates who actually wanted to be in the program. We considered that taking an inflexible approach could discourage participation and think that there exists low potential for abuse for candidates abusing the ancillary benefits of the program. Regarding the two alternative approaches, We discuss underlying legal authority, associated pros and cons that the commission may wish to consider in determining whether to release Senator McCain from the matching payment program. The first alternative addresses a plain language interpretation of the Matching Payment Act. This interpretation would prohibit withdrawal and conclude that the commission does not have any discretion on the issue. The second alternative considers that withdrawal is permissible, but concludes that the Gephardt advisory opinion is non-binding and establishes the point of no return as the date the candidate receives public funding payments. Our Associate General Counsel, Lawrence Calvert, will expand on these alternatives in just a moment. Finally, we provided the Commission with a supplemental memorandum on our conclusion that an affirmative vote of four commissioners is required to release Senator McCain from the matching payment program. We stated that four votes are required for entry into the program, and that absent legal authority for any person or entity to affect the determination, four commissioner votes are necessary to authorize reversal of eligibility status. We also note that a candidate cannot unilaterally determine that the regulatory requirements of the program are not binding, and that if withdrawal standards are going to apply, the commission must evaluate and determine whether the standards have been met. Mr. Calvert.
Thank you, Ms. Lee, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. We wanted to expand a little bit and sort of walk you through the rationales for the three potential outcomes that we've presented in our memo. The first outcome would say, as Ms. Lee indicated, outcome one in our memo is one of the two outcomes that we're not recommending. And it would say that not only may Senator McCain not withdraw, but nobody may withdraw. And it is based in a close reading of the text of both FECA and the Matching Payment Act. FECA provides that any candidate who is determined to be eligible for matching funds shall be subject to spending limits. And conversely, it binds the government by providing that the commission shall certify candidate who is eligible as entitled to payment of particular amounts, and that the Treasury shall promptly pay those amounts once certified. In this reading, would note that there's an awful lot of mandatory language there. The candidate shall be bound to the limits, the government is bound, we shall certify, the Treasury shall pay, and that there's no indication in all of that mandatory language of any discretion to do anything other than what the statute says. And if you were to read that very restrictively and in a very textualist manner, you could come to the conclusion that withdrawal isn't permitted by the statute, that once a candidate is determined to be eligible, that certain things happen and they are bound to happen and that they can't be reversed. Alternatively, the commission could as well determine that, well, no, there is nothing in the statute that specifically says in as many words that you can't withdraw. The commission has in the past permitted candidates to withdraw from the matching payment program, and the statutory silence, according to familiar principles of administrative law like the Supreme Court's Chevron decision, and even cases that we have been a party to, such as the D.C. Circuit's Kennedy decision in 1984, would say that that's a statutory silence that the commission, that it is the commission's job to fill, so long as its interpretation of the statute isn't arbitrary or capricious or contrary to the terms of the statute. So that would lead you to a conclusion, as the commission has concluded in three prior matters, the Dole, Dean, and Gephardt matters, that candidates can withdraw. Saying that a candidate can withdraw, though, is not the same as saying exactly where the point of no return that Ms. Lee alluded to is. We do think that there is a point of no return inherent in the matching funds system, whereby the candidate has received the benefit of the constitutional bargain in which they give up their right to speak freely in exchange for a public benefit, or to speak without limit in exchange for a public benefit. If you believe that candidates can withdraw, there are two potential places that we've identified where that point of no return might be. The Gephardt opinion in 2003 contains language that indicates that the point of no return is when a candidate has pledged public funds as security for private financing. But what you could conclude is that, in point of fact, that the point of no return really is just when the public funds actually are distributed to the candidate, and you could get there this way. The Gephardt opinion, you could read the phrase about pledging public funds as security for private financing in the Gephardt opinion not as setting a binding condition precedent, for after all, under 437FC, the Commission can't use the AO process to make generally binding rules of law. You could say that it was simply a material fact that was material to Congressman Gephardt's request and that of his committee. The Gephardt committee had not pledged public funds as security for private financing. And so you could read that as simply saying that any candidate who presented the same facts would be able to rely, and who presented materially indistinguishable facts would be able to rely on that opinion, and that the Commission had in Gephardt left for another day the question of what happens if a candidate does pledge public funds as security for private financing. You could then say, if you reached the conclusion that the point of no return is a little on, further on down the road, that, you know what, even if you just assumed for the sake of the argument that Senator McCain had pledged public funds for private financing, you'd thought about it, and actually you now determine that the point of no return for everybody is when the funds are actually paid out from the Treasury. And that would be a permissible interpretation of the statute as well. But it's not also not the one that we recommend. What we recommend is that you conclude, much as the Gephardt advisory opinion appeared to do, that in fact the point of no return is either you don't pledge any funds as security for private financing, it's when you get the Treasury money, or it's, if you do, it's when you pledge public funds as security for private financing. That raises a question, though, as to what the Commission meant in the Gephardt opinion when it used that phrase, pledged public funds as security for private financing. The Gephardt opinion does not say what the Commission meant by that phrase, and there are a number of things it could possibly mean. We concluded that the best place to look for what the Commission might have meant by that phrase was other areas of the Commission's own body of law in which it's used the similar phrasing and dealt with similar concepts. And in the Commission's regulations, there are really two places where it has dealt with similar concepts. There is the, in the public financing regulations, there is the bridge loan provision, which says that during a period of a shortfall in the matching payment fund, we will not count as expenditures interest payments to the bank where the candidate just goes to a bank and gets a short-term bridge loan to tide them over until the shortfall can be made whole by the Treasury. And there are also the regulations that are applicable not just in the public financing program, but the generally applicable regulations in 11 CFR 100.82 dealing with when loans are adequately collateralized. Those provisions at 100.82 have a five-part test for when a loan is adequately collateralized, two of which mention public funds, one of which actually applies only to public financing. 100.82 inquires whether the loan agreement required the public financing payments or other future receipts pledged as collateral to be deposited into a separate depository account for the purposes of retiring the bank loan debt. And in the public financing context, they inquire whether the borrower authorized the Secretary of the Treasury to directly deposit the payments into the depository account for the purpose of retiring the debt. So looking at those scenarios, we concluded that what the commission meant when it used the phrase pledged public funds as security for private financing was basically pretty narrow, that it was talking about situations in which a committee that is approved for public funds but hasn't received them yet, whether because of a shortfall or because it's the latter part of the calendar year before the election, goes to the bank and says, I'm supposed to get so much money in public funds, give me this amount and you'll get it back. Well, the two elements are of that are really sort of a lack of any ambiguity at all that the pledge, that the public funds are pledged as collateral for private financing, and provision for the public funds when they are available to be made to very rapidly find themselves in the hands of the lender in satisfaction of the debt. Applying those standards to Senator McCain's situation, this is what we came up with. The loan agreement contained basically two provisions that are potentially relevant. The original loan agreement provided first, that any certifications of matching fund eligibility, including related rights currently possessed by the McCain Committee, were obtained before January 1, 2008, are not themselves being pledged as security for the indebtedness and are not themselves collateral. The agreement was later modified to drop the January 1st reference. Reading eligibility as meaning eligibility and meaning all of this reading, which would mean that all of the certifications of entitlement to particular amounts that came out of that eligibility would be related rights to the eligibility. We read that as saying that on Senator McCain's initial eligibility, public funds are not pledged as security for private financing. There was also a provision in the loan agreement, that in the memo, that we have called the in-out-in provision. And under this provision, if Senator McCain determined to withdraw from the matching payment program, and if he then did poorly at the polls, according to specified percentages that were set forth in the loan agreement, he would then reapply for another eligibility into the public financing program. He would have pledged, of course, to remain a candidate to make that possible, and that he then promised to give the bank a first perfected security interest in any such funds to which he was eligible if that set of contingencies ever came to pass. The way we looked at the in-out-in provision was basically this. First of all, there's sort of a problem with, even before you apply the loan analysis to it, there's sort of this problem. The commission cannot withdraw or refuse to withdraw a hypothetical second eligibility that that might or might not occur, that it hasn't granted yet, and that in fact did not occur, and that it never granted. The other thing about that is that you can say that that's an unambiguous pledge of public funds as collateral only upon the occurrence of a series of contingencies of which the hypothetical second eligibility is no sooner than third. It would actually be more accurate to say that the in-out-in provision didn't pledge any public funds at all, at least at the time of the agreement, because at the time there was no such eligibility. There also was still no provision, whether under the in-out-in provision or not, in this loan agreement that made it clear that that the public funds were going to go immediately to the Treasury. And indeed, it's our understanding that Senator McCain never did and never yet has provided the Treasury with any information about where to deliver the public funds, either by wire transfer or elsewhere. So running through that analysis, we concluded ultimately that Senator McCain, we conclude that the commission should, first of all, we recommend that the commission adopt the outcome three legal framework because it has the closest fit to the basic concept of ensuring that the bargain is public funds in exchange for spending limits while still covering the bridge and bank loan situations as essentially a constructive receipt of public funds. And then applying that analysis, we concluded that Senator McCain did not, under that definition, pledge public funds as security for private financing, and that we recommend that you withdraw his certifications to the Treasury. And I apologize for the length of that presentation, but it was a fairly detailed analysis, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you have about that or anything else.
Actually, everyone's quick. The ultimate recommendation is withdraw the certification.
Yes.
Okay.
And approve attached letters to the Treasury,
which would require a vote
to do that,
because that would go to the Department of Treasury, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just so we're clear on what the actual recommendation is. Thoughts, comments, questions? The floor is open. Do we have a motion on the recommendation? Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Bowerly.
At the outset, I'd like to address questions raised about whether the commission can act at all upon Senator McCain's letter, which states that it's a notice rather than a request. The commission has, on at least two other occasions, treated such notices as withdrawal requests. And in addition, in this matter in particular, then-Chairman Mason on February 19th informed Senator McCain through his counsel that the commission would treat this notice as a request. And that's what remains pending before us today, I believe. In addition, it's my view that the commission has authority to treat this letter as a request because the alternative is not, in my view, contemplated by the statute. As the counsel mentioned, it seems that there must be a point of no return under the system in order to protect its integrity, and that's what the commission decided essentially in the Gebhardt AO. This would become meaningless if candidates would be able to unilaterally withdraw after receiving money. So as we're contemplating this question of how to deal with this request, for me the question is what factors should we consider when a candidate presents such a request to us to withdraw from this program. It is a voluntary program, and I think that's both mandated by the Constitution and a very important beneficial aspect of the program. So we should make this program as attractive to candidates to use, because that's the purpose of the statute, is to provide this public funding, and I personally think that's a good idea, and I think as the commission is charged with enforcing and implementing the law, that's our obligation. It's my view in the Gebhardt AO, AO 2335, the commission addressed fairly similar facts and determined that it would permit a candidate to withdraw so long as the candidate had not received matching payment program funds and had not pledged the certification of matching funds as security for private financing. And as the council has said, that phrase is not defined in that AO, so it does require some analysis in my view. In this case, we're told by the bank's lawyers that the loan terms were carefully drafted to exclude from the bank's collateral any matching fund certification, retaining the flexibility to withdraw from the matching fund program as set out by under the authority of Gebhardt. So even Senator McCain's lawyers believe that Gebhardt could preclude granting a request for withdrawal once public funds had been received or had been pledged as security. The question here is whether Senator McCain pledged those public funds as security for the loan, and the loan documents themselves are, shall we say, slightly murky on this in my view. In the space for collateral in the loan document, which was originally executed on November 11th, 2007, it specifically excludes as collateral any certifications for matching fund eligibility currently possessed by the borrower obtained before January 1st. And at this point in time, Senator McCain had been declared eligible for matching funds in the amount of approximately $700,000. The contract further requires McCain to remain a candidate and states that in the event that he were to withdraw from the matching fund program but lost in New Hampshire, he would reapply for those matching funds and grant it to the bank as a first priority perfected security interest. On its face, it appears to me that the bank's lawyers may have been successful in drafting a loan agreement that did not pledge public funding as a security for the loan, but instead only included a conditional future promise to stay in the matching system. On December 17th, a modification was made to the loan document, however, and this happened 2 days before the commission certified Senator McCain for over $5.5 million in public funds. That modification, the loan, the loan documents were amended to redefine collateral as excluding only any certification of matching funds eligibility now held by the borrower and or John McCain. In other words, as I read it, under the new terms of the loan modification, collateral for the loan could be read to include any certification for matching funds received after December 17th, including those that $5.5 million in public funds for which he was certified on December 19th. For me, this raises the question of whether this these sets of documents fit squarely within Gephardt's view of pledging public funding as security for the loan. Absent viewing public funding as collateral for the loan, it is difficult for me to see what collateral might have been pledged for this loan. And as the council has stated, we have a regulation which sets forth some specific requirements for what a loan must look like. So in my view, there are two ways to read this loan document. Either there is collateral in the form of the matching payment system, the payments for which Senator McCain would receive under that system, or that the terms of the loan may not be sufficient to ensure repayment as required under our regs, and thus may raise different issues. The question before us is whether Senator McCain should be permitted to withdraw. I think it's a close call for me, and I think that, frankly, the creative drafting of these documents are both confusing and perhaps troubling from my perspective, but I conclude that they are future promises to stay in the matching program and thus not sufficient to meet the pledge to security requirements of Gephardt. And thus, having neither received public funds nor pledged them as security, the McCain Committee should be permitted to withdraw from the program.
Other comments? Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For me, there's a basic threshold question that I need to get resolved before I can get to the next question of whether Senator McCain's certification should be withdrawn by the commission, and that is whether that is our decision to make. It's been contested that it isn't, that all the senator had to do was send us a letter and say, I'm out, bye-bye, and we have nothing to say about it. And I strongly disagree with that position. I sat down with former Chairman Mason in February with our council, and we thought long and hard about what we should do with that letter when we received it. I thought it was an example of the best that this commission can be in its functioning, and that it was a totally bipartisan, in a sense it was in a nonpartisan decision. We sat there together and thought about the law and discussed the law and researched the law and asked for counsel on the law, and it was not made with a view toward achieving a particular result for a particular candidate, or in mind of the party affiliation of that candidate, or whether we liked the candidate or would want to vote for the candidate. It was a purely legal question. Being evenly split, this commission really can't function unless people are willing to come together and talk that way and work across party lines. And Commissioner Mason was always willing to do that, and I appreciated that about him. And he appears to have suffered some consequences from that decision on his part to work in that fashion, because his nomination to continue to serve on the commission was subsequently withdrawn by the president. But we came to this conclusion together, although he signed it, as the chairman almost always signs the correspondence of the commission, that indeed the commission did have that role, that members of the regulated community cannot decide for themselves. no matter who they are, excuse me, they do not have the prerogative to decide for themselves when they're in compliance with the law and when they're not in compliance with the law and what the law means and what it doesn't mean. That is ultimately the role of the commission, and if people don't like it, they can sue us over it, and then ultimately it gets resolved by the courts. It's been known to happen. But I feel very strongly that we need to preserve our prerogative as an administrative agency, as an enforcement agency, to be the arbiter of the law and not just to accept the views of the regulated community on what they think the law ought to be. So for me, this is a really important threshold question, and I completely agree that the only way to get out is to have four votes, and that was our dilemma at the time, is we didn't have four votes to give him if we wanted to. We only had two votes. So here we stand a number of months later, and finally, I think everyone's pleased that we have a commission that's got six members. But it would be very unfortunate, in my view, if we waited all that time to get a fully functioning commission, only to have the commission turn around and, as one of its first official acts, start ceding its authority to the regulated community. So before I can even reach the question of whether it would be appropriate for the commission to determine that Senator McCain can withdraw from the public financing system, I really need to know whether we have that consensus here today, whether this commission believes that it has that authority to make that decision, because I do. And if there's not that consensus, then I probably am not going to be able to support any subsequent result that comes afterwards.
Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Weintraub, I don't believe that question is before us today. So I think we're all certainly willing to have that debate, and you bring up some good points. But the question before us today, as the chairman just asked the council, is whether or not we vote on the recommendation to send the letters to withdraw the certification to the Secretary of Treasury and to approve the attached letters to council for Senator McCain. So I don't know that that's necessarily something that we have to hit squarely. If it is covered by this, then I think I, speaking for myself, am willing to make that vote, that we have to do that in this case to send those letters to tell the Secretary of Treasury not to give him any funds. I think this case raises a lot of interesting issues, as you mentioned. For one thing, when the senator originally sent his letter, as many of us have noted, there was no working commission. And the commission does need four votes to act, which is why it was literally impossible for the commission to vote or not vote. So it was not an issue that was even before the commission at the time, because there wasn't one. And also, I think Senator McCain's campaign probably had a lot to rely on in their decision to send a letter just notifying the commission of its withdrawal. First of all, there was no commission. And second of all, Regulation 9035.2D, which states the expenditure limitations of 11 CFR 9035.1 shall not apply to a candidate who does not receive matching funds at any time during the matching payment period. And clearly, I don't think the fact that the senator did not receive any funds is not debatable at this point. He did not receive any funds. So those two factors put together, and also, as Commissioner Bowerly suggested, there are several advisory opinions on point here. So I think the senator had enough cover to say, I'm hereby withdrawing. One other point in this matter is that I think we all can agree that campaigns must know the rules of the game in order to complete their campaign strategy. And to the extent that commission rules aren't clear, as we've learned today, people can submit advisory opinion requests, as Senator Barack Obama did in 2007 when he was preparing for a possible candidacy. In his request, he noted that, quote, without a clear determination from the agency, the senator cannot complete planning for his campaign. The FEC subsequently issued a clear opinion granting his request to raise general election funds while he was a primary candidate, but preserve his right to accept public funding in the general election. And again, the point is that people need clear rules in order to run their campaigns, And I think that there was precedent here for the senator to write his letter in that way. And in this case, I am prepared to vote on the recommendations before us. Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address the issue of jurisdiction or discretion, because I struggled with the same issue myself, because I noted that in two of the times before which we dealt with the issue, both with respect to the Dole matter and the Governor Dean, when they withdrew, in each instance they gave notice that they were withdrawing, and we chose to call it a request. And then with respect to the advisory opinion in Gephardt, that's different. They asked for an advisory opinion, we gave an advisory opinion. So the only two times when there was actually a withdrawal, and Gephardt did not withdraw, the only two times when there actually was a withdrawal issue, they gave notice of withdrawal, just like Senator McCain did. And so did we create the situation by calling it a request or not? And I have to admit, in my conversations with a number of commissioners, I was struggling with the idea of, well, do we have anything more than a ministerial act? Once a letter is sent, I'm out. And clearly there's no money in that particular case. Do we have any discretion? And I thought probably we do not. So, but in the process of thinking about it, there are a number of times when, first of all, we have to administer the law with respect to public funding. And we also have to provide the Treasury Department with a certificate of eligibility to participate. Whenever we do that, it seems to me we have an ongoing relationship, regardless of the candidate. I don't mean that in a negative way or in a minor way, to work with the Department of Treasury in administering the system. In this particular case, and in others, when we issue that certification, as we did initially, of eligibility, and then we told the Treasury in a subsequent certification, first of all, I'll go back, when we issued the original certificate of eligibility, automatically that means an eligibility for $100,000. Subsequently, there was a submission by the senator for over $5 million, I think $5.9 million, something like that, $5.8 million, which that gets you up to the $6 million mark. We authorized Treasury to pay that money to Senator McCain. Then a letter comes out from his campaign saying that he has withdrawn. Now, statutorily, Treasury must abide by whatever we tell them to do in connection with that process. They don't decide how the money is going to be spent. They just decide to comply with our certification. So regardless of the other issues, which I'm not saying are minor, I think we have an absolute duty to communicate and exercise our discretion as to when and when not Treasury is obligated to spend money on the campaign. We are aware that Treasury has awaited to hear from us on this issue, and they have been in a somewhat of a paralyzed state because they are aware of the letter, they are aware of the claim that there's no desire to receive the money. On the other hand, the commission has remained silent. And I'm glad we're not. I have to be one of the ones that was without a paycheck for 6 months, and I'm glad to be back for that and other reasons. But everybody was in a period of paralysis. So I think Treasury, that relationship alone is an important factor in determining to what extent we have discretion here. And I think we have to exercise it. I think the question is, sometimes our discretion may be fairly limited by the facts. And I think a commissioner pointed out the one regulation that is of interest to me, because I think it's, of all the regulations, of which we have almost none here on this issue, and the statute does not tell us, give us guidance on when a person can withdraw, or when they cannot, or if they can, or if they cannot, once they get certified. Likewise, the regulations don't speak to that either. And I think we need to regulate in the area, because I think candidates are left in somewhat of a no person's land when they get into situations like this, and there's a lot at stake. Certainly it was for the senator. Some action on our part could certainly have been given if we were in commission, so to speak, and very early on in February. If there was a disagreement with our decision, they could certainly take that up for a judicial decision on whether or not we were correct. but that was foreclosed by the events that occurred. But the one regulation that to me is important to keep in mind is one that we've adopted. It says the expenditure limitations of 11 CFR 90351 shall not apply to a candidate who does not receive matching funds at any time during the matching payment period. Essentially saying if you don't receive the money, you don't have the limits. That's our law. So when I look at that, it seems clear to me that we have discretion and we must exercise it within the confines of what the law says. In this particular case, it's complicated because we issued an advisory opinion in the Gephardt matter in which a phrase was included that he was allowed to withdraw, I'm not sure if it said so long as, but in view of the fact that there was no pledging of public funds as security for private financing. In that particular AO, advisory opinion, there was none. So the issue never really presented itself on the merits to the commission. That's what we do if there was. This is really a case of first impression if we were to find that there was a pledging. And I would also add that to elevate that phrase in this case without any definition or public input regarding the meaning of those words would be, to me, beyond what would be appropriate here. Now, I recognize that Office of General Counsel suggests that it has specific meaning, but on the other hand, it's not clear if that is so or not. And furthermore, an advisory opinion, as most all of you here are aware, is not the law. It's our opinion on the law. And sometimes we're right and sometimes we're wrong, but an advisory opinion provides someone who asks for it a shield from prosecution civilly or criminally if they comport with our advice. We can only make the law and make it enforceable as law for all unless we adopt a procedure to adopt rules, which we've not done other than the one I just read to you. That means you get public comment. We have to issue explanation and justification so that the rule is clear as to what we're adopting and why, and we've had the benefit of public input on that. None of that has occurred in this case with respect to that requirement. I'm not saying it's unreasonable. In fact, I think there are times when it would make a lot of sense. But I think for us to blindly say this is applicable is beyond what I think is reasonable in this particular case. I also would agree with the comments of the commissioners so far that have dealt with the subject that in looking at the transaction itself, the question is, did you pledge public funds as security for private financing? That's the phrase. The loan documents had two potential ways to do this, or two potential opportunities. One, by the certificate that was already issued to the senator. In that particular one, the one certificate of eligibility which was actually issued, there was only one, the loan documents made clear that it was exempt. Now, there can be a lot of conversation about that, but nevertheless, the loan documents are completely clear on that, and counsel for the senator indicated they were quite aware of that provision, and regardless of whether or not they thought it was law or not, they did not want to be subject to a claim of violation for not adhering to that phrase. And so there was no way under the documents that I read them that the bank could have enforced a first priority interest in any money coming out that particular time. In fact, the loan documents anticipated that the senator on his own could withdraw and foreclose that particular asset, if you want to call it that, at any time. And ultimately, of course, the senator did with no problem on the part of the bank. The second opportunity for pledging would be any certificate to be issued in the future. The loan documents did contemplate that if the senator did poorly, and that was specified to a certain degree of distance between the winner and not in either the caucuses or the primaries occurring after his withdrawal, that he would, within 30 days, as I recall, apply for matching funds. And if that were accepted and if that were issued, then they would have a first priority perfected interest. As I understand it, the only way you can perfect an interest in a security certificate at this time that's been done in the past is to actually give Treasury instructions to issue those funds to the account of the lender. at which time that is the perfected way in order to assure that the money goes to the lender. And neither with respect to the first or of course the second was that done. I think the Office of General Counsel is quite correct in their analysis that you couldn't have a pledge of security interest for something that's non-existent. As to the first, there clearly was not one, and as to the second, it was not ever one that came into existence. So in looking at the loan documents, regardless of the law with respect to hypothecation, I think there was no such pledge. So for those reasons, I'm willing to support the recommendation of the General Counsel.
May I ask a question of clarification that I think may go to Commissioner Weintraub's concern, which I also share. As I mentioned, I do believe this is an action that requires the discretion of the commission. As the vice chairman said, it may require consideration of a fairly limited set of factors. It's my understanding that we were going to be substituting agenda document 817C for the letters in the council's recommendation. And
not to talk about myself in the third person, but in the opinion of the chair, I think that's right. I think the vice chair, his support of the recommendation is as amended by the blue draft.
Okay, well,
I believe. Now, the vice chair can speak for himself, but I believe that's where we are.
I'll just finish up with my understanding of what that means. In particular, that's important to me, and I raise that question because on the second page of that document, it's a letter to Mr. Potter as general counsel for John McCain 2008 that says responding to this request requires the exercise of the discretion of the commission. And to me that is an important factor. As I stated earlier, I believe that is a decision that this commission must make. It's well within our authority, and in my view, the alternative view that a candidate could simply voluntarily get in and out at will undermines the integrity of the whole system.
Kind of on the first round, see if we have anyone. No. Mr. Weintraub.
I didn't have anything to say.
We're being educated, I think.
I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I thank Commissioner Bowerly for pointing out that language in the letters, because I was looking at the wrong side of the piece of paper, and I thought that concept was in there somewhere, but I.
Trying to save paper by doing two-sided.
I think that's great.
Going green with blue.
We want to be very environmentally responsible here at the FEC. So I just want to confirm that is indeed my colleague's understanding of what these letters mean, because I appreciate Commissioner Hunter saying that, I think I heard her say that she does agree with that concept, although I disagree when she said she didn't think it was squarely before us, because I think it actually is quite squarely before us, and I just need to be assured of that proposition.
Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you for the clarification. I agree that we are substituting the letters with the agenda document 187C, and I am willing to vote for those. Due to the concerns of my colleagues, I'm not sure that we need the language in there that we discussed, but in this case, I'm perfectly willing to vote for that language due to your concerns. One of the things I was addressing in my previous comments is that I don't think the question of what is the point of no return and at what point does the commission need to really examine whether or not someone may be able to withdraw, that's not before us today because of the fact that the senator did not accept any public funding. So for me here, a lot of those issues that we've discussed are not necessarily relevant because of the fact, again, in regulation 9035.2D, that the senator did not accept any public funds. But I am willing to support that language. Thank you.
Does that help?
That does help. That does help. And that's also.
Does that help us a certain direction?
Commissioner Peterson. Yes.
It did.
It's we're making progress. Don't worry.
Always progress. Never know if that means motion, though. Progress is always subjective.
I just wanted to seek clarification from my other colleagues. That's all.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In looking through these drafts, my understanding was the same as Commissioner Hunter's, that the issue of whether or not the commission must have an affirmative four vote majority in order to release someone from the matching payment program My understanding was that was not before us and wasn't necessarily even implicated by this letter. Maybe the case that I'm one of six who doesn't have that understanding for a number of constitutional, legal, and policy-related reasons. I do not...
Can I just point of order? But the letter does say what it says, right?
Yes.
I agree that there, it says what it says.
Yes, okay. I do. By definition, the letter does say what it says. So, my interpretation of that letter is not confirming that in all instances the commission necessarily must take a vote and have a majority of four before someone who's within the matching payments program, that four vote is are necessary before that they can be released from the program. So.
If I could jump in, maybe bring some more clarity to this. My view of this issue began from a completely different premise than I think most, because I came at it really much more from the fact that the government can't force participation in what the U.S. Supreme Court has said is a voluntary program. The reason why we can have matching funds and taxpayer money funding campaigns is due to the voluntariness of the program. Buckley Court made that clear. Subsequent courts dealing with state similar state laws made that clear. So my initial reaction was, if someone wants to withdraw, they can withdraw. But then, based in large part because of the very thoughtful analysis of the vice chair, many conversations with him, thinking through these issues, certainly helped my thinking and brought me much further down the analysis than a simple analysis. I don't think we reached the constitutional issue, so it makes it easier. I think that ultimately the commission has certified a candidate, and the commission has to, if the facts warrant, withdraw the certification. I emphasize acts as the facts warrant. So there is some commission decision that occurs here. And I believe that to withdraw the certification does require a commission vote. Certainly, I'm not comfortable signing a letter on behalf of the commission that did not receive a commission vote in a commission meeting to withdraw certification. I don't think it's something that the chairman can just go off and do, so therefore it must be something that requires a vote. So it certainly requires a vote. The commission has already addressed this issue in other contexts. I think there is some precedent here as to how the commission treats them. The Dean matter, the Gephardt matter, and the Dole matter, and then the Gephardt advisory opinion itself not only echoes the Buckley language, the commission has acknowledged that when Congress can puts into place a public financing system, it has to be voluntary, but it may condition acceptance of funds on an agreement by the candidate to abide by the spending cap. So actually the Supreme Court language as cited by the Commission AO does require acceptance of funds. With respect to the loan, I agree with much of what Commissioner Bowerly said. I have one minor point of disagreement, that's on the loan itself. I think that as the loan agreement says, it was not the matching funds were not pledged as some sort of security or collateral. I think it's clear, at least to me, that the folks who put the loan agreements together had read the Gephardt AO and were trying very hard to come within its protections. And I think they ought to be afforded those protections for having taken action in reliance upon a commission ruling. But with respect to whether or not there's other collateral, I think they're without really addressing that issue, because I don't think this is the context to get into it, but I want to point to at least one other prior commission matter, an enforcement matter regarding the Teamsters PAC, the Democrat Republican Independent Voter Education PAC, otherwise DRIVE PAC. It's MERF 5766, which provides a very good analysis on how the commission treats loans secured by future monies or property or other things. And the commission has, at least in one MERF, seemed to agree that loan agreements of that sort are perfectly permissible and well within bounds. So I don't really have much more to say on the loan agreement, because I don't really think it's necessarily, at least how I approach the issue, something that I had to spend a lot of time on. But I do have some concern on remaining consistent with how the commission operates. And the Gephardt advisory opinion does provide some guidance on that, where it essentially says that if someone lets us know that he wants to get out of the program, the commission will withdraw the certification. And that is what I think we're going to do here today. And I think the letter that is has gone around does that. And that's why I'm willing to support the council's recommendation as amended by that letter. To me, it is the way to proceed, because it is the way the commission has proceeded in the past. Ms. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I hear a consensus that supports the statement in the plain words of the letter that says responding to this request does require the exercise of the discretion of the commission. And as I said, it's a really key fact for me. It's interesting for me to listen to counsel analyze what did the commission mean when it issued the Gephardt AO, since I actually was here. I actually signed the Gephardt AO, not only voted for it, but signed it. And you are correct that the AO does say that candidates can withdraw, that the commission will withdraw certifications. What it says precisely is, in light of the terms of the Matching Payment Act, its judicial construction, its legislative history, and the other policy considerations discussed above, the commission would withdraw certification of a candidate's eligibility to receive Matching Payment Act funds prior to the payment date for any such funds to such candidate or his or her committee upon receipt of a written request signed by the candidate, provided that the certification of funds has not been pledged as security for private financing. That is the language that the commission on a unanimous vote approved. And it was not language that went unnoticed, because in fact, for purposes of clarity, when we discussed the opinion at the table, we actually moved that language from a different place in the opinion into that sentence. So everyone at the table knew the language was there. They looked at that language, they approved that language, and believed that to be a statement of the law. It's true that it's not a rulemaking, an AO, but it does reflect, I believe, what five commissioners at the time, because one was absent, that they believed to be an accurate statement of the law. And I think quite plainly, the Senator McCain and his lawyers were well aware of that. And whether they were trying to comply with it or do an end run on it, I'm not entirely sure at this point in time, but they certainly knew that that was the existing statement of the law from the commission. The pledge issue is difficult for me. I think it's a troubling set of documents, because I think there was some very careful maneuvering in those loan documents. The bank needed security for their loan. Our regulations require it. But they also, for their own sake, obviously would want to have a basis to make sure that they were going to be repaid. Now, if Senator McCain were successful, that was easy. Everybody, I think, would assume that he'd be able to repay the loan if his campaign took off. Back when these loan documents were executed, that was very much up in the air. I don't think that it was at all considered a sure thing back in November and December of last year that Senator McCain would ultimately win the nomination. And props to him for taking a campaign that was really at one point virtually bankrupt and retooling and turning it around and turning it into a winning campaign. He did an unbelievable job with that. But it is true that at that point in time, he had practically no money. Without the loans in December, he would have been in the red. So he really needed those loans. And the bank needed to know how he was going to pay them back if indeed he was not successful. And I think that it would have been, aside from complying with our rules, it would have been crazy for the bank to enter into that transaction without some assurance that it could be paid back if he were not to be successful. So what was that security? There really wasn't much there besides this promise that ultimately they could get at the public funding. They wrote it in an unusual way. We have been looking at loan documents for candidates in this building for 30 years, and we've never seen one quite like that before. But, you know, candidates can be innovative. That's fine. We encourage innovation. But this one really was unusual in the way it was drafted. And we've seen that the commission has looked at a lot of loan documents. We looked in the last cycle at John Kerry's loan, which was secured by his real estate, and somebody filed a complaint and said, gee, we don't think the real estate was worth enough to have secured a loan of that amount, and the commission actually looked into whether the property was worth that much and determined that it was. But this is not a new question for the commission to have to take a look at whether the security that's put up for a loan to a presidential candidate is adequate. And as we learned from Senator John Glenn, if the campaign goes south, it's very, very difficult to repay acquired debt from a failed presidential campaign, even for a senator and a legitimate hero of America. Senator Glenn was never able to repay the debts on his campaign. He just couldn't raise the money, and it's always hard for any candidate, presidential or senatorial, to retire debt, because nobody wants to put money into retiring debt. So I think it was not a small matter whether there was going to be something that the bank could turn to, and you know, it's a tough choice how you analyze this. There are not good results here either way, because if the public funds were not the security for this loan, then I think, you know, one can really question whether there was adequate security for this loan at all. And if there wasn't adequate security for the loan, that would be actually a much bigger problem for the campaign, because if there were no security for the loan, then it is arguably an in-kind contribution, the entire amount of the loan, to the candidate's committee. And that, I think, would be a much worse situation for the candidate to find himself in. So I actually think that finding that the public funds were the security for the loan is in some sense a favor to the candidate, puts him in a better place. But one does have to come back to the Gephardt language, provided that the certification of funds has not been pledged to security for private financing. Was it or wasn't it? You know, it sure looks like a pledge to me, because there wasn't anything else there. They promised that they would provide these funds if that was the only way to pay back the loan. So I have a lot of problems with the way this loan was written and how it all comes before us. Now, it's true that the senator was in a very in kind of a pickle in February when we didn't have four commissioners to deal with a request. However, he wasn't in that situation in November when he first, or perhaps in October when he first started negotiating those loans. And I actually would have preferred, and I think the senator would have been better served had he sent in an advisory opinion request back last fall when he was thinking about doing this. There were five commissioners back then, and we were taking steps to answer questions quickly when we could. And I think that it had that request come in asking us head on to reconsider the language in the Gephardt AO, I'm pretty sure that we would have turned that one around and given him an answer. And I think that as important as the chairman thinks it is to stay within the bounds of previous advisory opinions, I think that there are times when one can reconsider. And I would have been prepared then, and I am prepared now, to reconsider the reasoning of the Gephardt AO in that statement that the certification of funds is the that pledging the certification of the funds is the trigger, is the no return point. Because I think one does have to reach a point of no return. Otherwise, somebody could take public funds and actually take receipt of the money and then change their mind and say, you know what, now my campaign's taking off, so I'm going to pay the money back to the government and not abide by the expenditure limits. And that, it seems to me, would be a very bad situation. It sort of turns us into an interest-free bank for candidates. So the question is, what is that point of no return? And I'm prepared. It's an odd circumstance to be in. As I said, we would have been better served had the advisory opinion request come in back last fall, because we can't supersede an advisory opinion sitting around here talking at the table. But I'm prepared to reconsider the legal principles that were embodied in that advisory opinion request. And, you know, should we receive an advisory opinion request in the future, obviously it would be embodied in that. Because I think that as troubling as I find this loan and all the shenanigans with the way it was written, where it's not collateral, but it is collateral, but it could be collateral, and it might be in the future collateral, it sure looks like a pledge to me. Sort of reminds me of that Magritte painting, where it's a painting of a pipe, but the heading underneath the caption of the painting is, this is not a pipe. And that's sort of the way these loan documents read to me. They say, this isn't collateral, but they sure seem to be using it to secure the loan. However, when I look at the broader picture of where we would have been, you know, even assuming there was a full commission back in February, would it have served public policy to have told Senator McCain at that point, you're stuck with the limits, and you're going to have to abide by limits that your opponents are not abiding by, you know, by their choice, voluntary basis. I think that probably would not have been a good result for this election season or for the country in terms of vetting the issues in the campaign and making sure that we have a fully and fairly fought election, which is, after all, what we want to do. I think one can argue about actual receipt versus constructive receipt and whether pledging the funds, it does indeed come within the regulation that the vice chairman was reading earlier. He did get benefits from the from his eligibility for public funding. He got the loan, obviously, which he needed very much at that point. But he also was able to get on the ballot in at least Ohio and perhaps some other states. I'm not exactly sure. In a way that saved a lot of resources for him that other candidates had to expend. So there was a competitive advantage to him vis-a-vis his primary opponents in being eligible and getting himself eligible for public funding and having the commission give him that letter originally. So I think it is, as I said, a difficult case that can be argued both ways. But given what I believe to be the consensus that it is our decision to make, which, as I said, is a really important threshold question for me, I am willing to reconsider what I believe to have been the governing law as stated by the commission in the Gephardt advisory opinion and allow and approve the letters on the basis that, not on the basis that's stated in counsel's opinion necessarily, but on the basis that he did not actually receive the funds. I think that an argument can be made for constructive receipt, but he did not actually receive the funds. And just as I approve the Obama AO in the spirit that we ought to be encouraging people to participate and therefore not place high hurdles on them once they have submitted their application, I think that I'm prepared to vote in favor of this.
That made me thirsty.
Sorry, made me thirsty too.
I had to get a glass of water. Comments, concerns?
Do we have any motions?
I think we're looking for a motion on the council's recommendation, and then we'll probably have a second motion amending the council's recommendation. But that's my suspicion as what people may want to do. So then on the table is the actual letter. I think procedurally that's the way to go if someone has an input.
Just a question. I mean, we can vote on the council's recommendation. I'll vote no on that. But I wonder if we need to do that, or whether what we need to do is to approve the sending of these letters. We can do it either way.
Well, the recommendation, as I read it, and I'm on page 17 of 18, Roman numeral 5 recommendation, the Office of General Counsel recommends that the commission, that's the part I'm focused on, one, withdraw the certification of to the Secretary of the Treasury, that Senator McCain and John McCain 2008 Inc. are entitled to payment from the Matching Payment Act account, and to approve the attached letters to counsel for Senator McCain and John McCain 2008 Inc. and the United States Treasury. I think we're going to substitute in the letters with a revised letter. So the vote would be on, are we going to withdraw, and then approving the letter withdrawing the certification. I think that's the recommendation, and that's the actual vote, is really essentially on the letter. Now, how we couch that, I'm curious to if everyone's going to make a motion on this. We could just move the letter. We could sidestep the first question, but to me, it's really the vote on the letter is a vote on the letter.
I, As I said, Mr. Chairman, if you want to vote on the council's recommendation, I'm sure that it will carry, and I'll vote no because I don't agree with the analysis in the lengthy and detailed, and I appreciate all the hard work that went into it.
May concur in the result, though. You may vote affirmatively for the result.
I will be willing to vote to send the letters if that is a separate vote.
That's the only. Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that's the only vote at this point that we're going
to. Well, there's no vote right now. There's no motion. I'm looking for a motion as to what we're actually going to vote on. And if the consensus is we simply want to vote on the letter, then someone can make a motion to that effect. That if they want to actually vote on the recommendation to withdraw the certification and then memorialize that in a letter that's part of the same vote, they can do that. Traditionally, chairman don't make the motion. Someone else makes the motion. Commissioner Bowerly may
chairman,
have a motion.
I would move that we someone can amend my motion if they feel like I've mischaracterized something. That we withdraw the certification of Senator McCain in the matching fund program,
okay.
Grant his request, and approve the letters that are identified as 817C.
Okay. Check and make sure we're voting on the right version of the letter.
All
right, we have a motion. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? No. 6-0 passes to send a letter to the Department of Treasury. That makes me feel good, so now I can sign the letter, because now I know I have the commission approval. Before everybody runs off, and one more item on the agenda, administrative matters and the like. Announcement more for the public. Regulations, we're going to start doing those again. We have a regulations committee, which I don't think is a secret. Commissioners Hunter and Weintraub are going to be working very diligently on that, and we have they have come together, and we've already put in place a schedule, I think, at least tentatively, on different topics of rulemakings. As I understand it, the bundling rules, the reality is they cannot take effect this election cycle. Under the APA, it takes some time to put rules in place with notice and comment and the like, and there's a three-month window there before they become effective. The goal, the shared goal, is to get those in effect by next election cycle so that people are moving forward under the law. I think we're shooting for a hearing the week of September 15th, in the middle of that week, but we need to check with the witnesses to make sure the witnesses are available. We have not done that. We've only gotten so far as to check our own schedules, and now we have to contact each of the witnesses to make sure everyone has a full opportunity to comment and participate in that process. The other rulemaking that's going to go on, two others in the short term, Shays 3, we call it. Is no secret, it's already been reported by at least one publication. We have not appealed the DC Circuit's decision in Shays 3, so there will be a rulemaking. We're going to try to do that this year, but the reality is it'll probably be in the winter. So it'll be a little bit this year, a little bit next year, and try to get that done. The Millionaires Amendment rulemaking will also get going. That is in the result of the FEC versus Davis case, where the court struck down some provisions of the so-called Millionaires Amendment. As we learned today in the Lautenberg AO, it's only some provisions, but that requires rulemaking because the reporting forms have to be changed, some of the regs have to be peeled out and reworked, and then sometimes things that maybe made sense with some other clause all of a sudden don't make clause, seem to cross-reference the regs and that kind of thing. It's very time-intensive to do, and we're going to endeavor to do that. The travel regs, prior commission had done quite a bit of work. I think right now the commissioners are reviewing those to see where they stand and reading through the rules and the other materials that were presented in the rules to see if we can get some sort of plan of action, and then if assuming there's a plan, what the timing of the plan is. Anyone has any comments on the rules? Those on the committee, if I admitted, thumbs up, nod. Oh, good job. Okay.
I guess I just put in one caveat that I agree, we're certainly going to start those Shays rulemakings this fall, winter. What's the last day of winter? I'm not sure. I wouldn't want us to be too firm on exactly when we'll wrap those up, because I know that we are going to want to take a good hard look at what's been done before and how we can do better.
Right. Part of that is why we're putting the bundling, though, up front, because Congress did pass a law that requires a rulemaking, and until the rule goes into effect, the statute essentially does not go into effect, unlike the travel rules, which they still, there is a statute that sort of lives and breathes without our interpretation via rulemaking, but that's not the case with bundling, and because the bundling reporting regime is essentially a per-cycle reporting regime, I think we're really going to see if we can get it effective, or at least on the books, and if the effective date is somehow in the next cycle, which may end up being the case because of the way the statute is written, so be it, but at least people are going to have guidance so they need to know how to proceed. The prior commission tried to do that, actually, in the, I think it was in the it was the ENJ or the proposed rule noted that it would be essentially effective as of the beginning of this cycle, to the or the beginning of the year, I think it was, beginning of 2008, but the hope sprung eternal, but then the hope sprung a leak, and the commission was no longer able to vote. So this is our way to kind of let the public know what's going on with the rulemakings. There's been a lot of questions about it, and we thought it would be worthwhile to announce that. I don't have anything else on the agenda. I'd like to actually Chris Healy, who's our essentially the deputy general counsel, who's Tommy Duncan, our general counsel, was unable to be here today. He's put a tremendous amount of work into getting today to move smoothly, and we are now on the eve of breaking for lunch, and we've gone through a number of advisory opinions, and one of the main presidential candidates matter in a very short period of time. If it wasn't for his work and his team's work, today would not have happened. Anything else for the good of the order from the commissioners before I ask counsel's office and staff director if they have anything? Hearing none, are there any management and administrative matters to be discussed?
There are none.
Thank you. I'd like to adjourn the meeting without objection. So adjourned.